The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Matt Broughton, Senior Editor at ExchangeWire, and I'm delighted to be joined today by our very special guest, Tom Simpson, who is SVP of APAC at Head Colony. Hello to you, Tom.
Hi, Matt. Great to be here.
Oh, it's so splendid. That's a chirpy start to start things off. And going similarly chirpy to our second guest, Lindsay Rowntree, Director of Operations at ExchangeWire. Hello to you, Lindsay.
I'm not chirpy.
Why are you not chirpy, Lindsay?
I'm the anti-Tom, I think.
we've gone full.
Hang on, are you saying you're anti-Tom?
I mean, no, I'm not. I'm not anti-Tom.
You can't start slagging off guests straight off the bat, Lindsay.
This has gone badly. This has gone badly.
I'm just walking out right now.
I'm insulting our guests. This is terrible.
It's so rude. I was going to go into we've got a whole yin and yang thing going here, but no, it's just Lindsay just being rude.
It's just abusive, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. I'll start again and say it's lovely to be here with Tom and Matt. I'm delighted.
Splendid. What a joyous start to the podcast. I think I'll move things swiftly on to the first news story. NFTs could become a $56 billion revenue opportunity for the luxury market by 2030, according to Morgan Stanley. The forecast published by the investment banking giant in a research note last week could represent a 10% share of the sector's revenue if it is achieved. The projected growth could come as a result of the proliferation of the metaverse, a virtual space where users interact via customizable avatars. Acknowledging that the metaverse will likely take many years to develop, the analyst behind the note said that NFTs and social gaming offer two nearer term opportunities for luxury brands. Morgan Stanley also predict that the NFT market could grow to up to a value of $240 billion by the next decade, with luxury brands making up to 8% of the total NFT market, up from the current 1% of transaction value it's currently accounting for. The virtual shopping experience is already available on gaming platforms such as Roblox and Fortnite, give an idea of what shopping in the metaverse might look like. Luxury brands, including Balenciaga and Gucci, have already experimented with selling virtual versions of products on these platforms, and analysts anticipate that many more will seize the opportunity that the metaverse affords them. Keen to get your first impressions here, guys, but also, do you agree that the metaverse could be a significant opportunity for retailers? Tom, let's start off with you.
Clearly it's the direction of travel for the internet over the next 10, 20 years. I mean, it's the metaverse is a paradigm shift from spending time in a flat two-dimensional environment to spending time in a three-dimensional space. One of the key mental models for thinking about the metaverse is the shift from what we call from buying things online to buying online things. And that's one of the big things that's going to happen. And, you know, we'll get into, I mean, maybe later we can talk about what definitions of the metaverse. But I think one of the really kind of important points to understand when the metaverse has actually arrived is that we care more about the things that we own in the metaverse. So we care more about the digital things that we own than perhaps we care about the physical things that we own. And maybe that's kind of a definition of when the metaverse has arrived, as opposed to Facebook might tell us that a definition of when the metaverse has arrived is that we're all walking around wearing VR goggles the entire time. I definitely don't think that's a definition of when we've arrived at the metaverse. So yeah, I mean, so the idea that in 2025 there'll be $50 billion spent on luxury good NFT items is not at all surprising. Global retail is $30 trillion. Okay, so $50 billion is 0.16% of the global retail market. So I mean, $50 billion is absolutely nothing. And when you think, I mean, I think one of the things that people think about NFTs, kind of getting into, you know, what NFTs are all about, is that maybe NFTs are either a picture of a pixelated punk or an ape or kind of stupid things that people spend insane amounts of money, like $15 million on, and nobody can quite understand why. But actually, you know, NFTs, NFT is just a technology. It's just a technology that enables uniqueness of an item in a digital space. So one way, one kind of another interesting mental model to think about that is that in the real world, everything is an NFT. So, I mean, this bottle is an NFT. My phone is an NFT. So that's all that NFT technology enables, is uniqueness of items in a digital space. So, you know, the idea that we're going to go into a digital space, we're going to be spending more time there, and that we're going to want to own things in that digital space, and that those things will be, will be NFTs, and that that's going to be a $50 billion part of a $30 trillion overall market, seems kind of fairly case closed to me.
Lindsay, what are your first thoughts on this one?
I think that I always have more questions than answers when it comes to anything metaverse related or NFT related. And that's why, Matt, you said you wanted to come to me first with this question. And I went, no, please go to Tom first. He knows much more than I do on it. Because Tom, it's really good to actually have this conversation with Tom, because a lot of what he shares on LinkedIn is very metaverse and NFT related. He really knows his stuff. And I think you even own an NFT. You've even invested in NFTs, haven't you, Tom, as well?
Yeah. I mean, I've bought quite a lot of NFTs. I mean, it's an interesting space.
Yes, see, I'm not there yet. So I'm still in the what the hell is this? And actually, just Tom saying we will know the metaverse when the metaverse has arrived, when we care more about the things we own digitally than physically. That to me is terrifying. That's a terrifying prospect, that I won't care about this. All these like possessions I've got, I'm surrounded by. I'll care more about what I'm seeing through a screen than I will do anything else. But change has to happen, right? So I'll just have to kind of live with it and deal with it. But from a luxury perspective, I do find it really interesting. And actually, Tom talking about the size of the metaverse luxury goods market versus what is actually the entire retail market makes me think that this for a lot of the luxury brands is just a really interesting marketing ploy for them. Actually, it's a chance for them to get in front of younger audiences, you know, a bit like they've been doing in magazines for years. So, you know, Ferrari always made a point of saying, you know, we actually target 15-year-olds, because actually when they become 30 and they're hedge fund managers, they're going to want to buy a Ferrari because they've been admiring one and coveting one since they were 15 years old. It feels a bit like that. So, you know, I think it's Gucci that are selling things like crowns and tiaras and whatever else for like $8, the equivalent of $8 on Roblox. So it's not like it's not attainable. It's very, very attainable. But with the average audience age being about 13 years old, these people aren't yet ready to go out and buy physical Gucci products, but actually they might want to down the line, or who knows, actually down the line, you know, given what Tom said about what the metaverse will be down the line, they'll be buying other things as well. But as you know, as Tom pointed out, like everything around us is an NFT in the sense of it's not exchangeable for one exact thing. They're all unique in their own way. What interests me about retail online is that you know, retailers in luxury retailers in the physical world, they go after scarcity rather than exclusivity. And so that's what I find interesting, is how will they move from getting a lot of hype over a particular type of bag, like the Hermes Birkin bag, for example, which is extremely expensive and there's only a certain number that exists in the world, to actually creating things that are exclusive. And what will exclusivity look like in the metaverse versus how they deal with scarcity in the real world?
Yeah, I think that rarity and prestige around luxury brands is what makes NFTs a bit more of a, you know, the use case is a bit more clear there. Whereas in terms of other brands, that's where personally I'm not 100% sure in terms of that pathway to the metaverse, where people are more interested in buying online version of things. Like, you know, obviously a Gucci NFT, it's going to be rare. It's going to have that prestige. I'm the one that owns the Gucci NFT. A Bachelor's Chicken Super Noodle NFT, it's not necessarily going to have that rarity and prestige. So it's the case for...
I'd prefer the latter.
I'd prefer a real life noodle sandwich.
A noodle sandwich?
Oh, this is education for
what
you guys,
you
and the viewers. It was a staple of my uni life. Barbecue beef or chicken soup and noodles in a sandwich. Try it. It'll revolutionise.
For listeners, Tom and I look horrified.
that's an incredible conversation. That's an incredible combination of foodstuffs. No, I'm totally with you. You can really see the path to, and it's not, you know, it's not a Gucci NFT. I think that's the thing. Like, yes, it's enabled by NFT technology, but you know, if you spend your time as an avatar, so a digital representation of yourself in, you know, in the metaverse, and you know, the metaverse, hanging out in Fortnite, you know, playing a game, hanging out in a shopping mall in Decentraland, doing some shopping with your mates or whatever it is. If that's where you spend your time, then you want that avatar to look super slick, right? And in the same way that you buy a Gucci handbag, I mean, I don't buy many Gucci handbags, but I understand that other people do. But, you know, you buy a Gucci handbag to represent your status and your taste in real life, you'll do exactly the same thing in the metaverse. And that's kind of, yeah, absolutely. The route to that is really clear. Yeah, I mean, for other categories, there'll be different, use cases. But there's an interesting one around beauty and beauty products. So if you think about at the moment, maybe people are prepared to pay large amounts of money for hyper-exclusive beauty products that have purportedly an amazing effect on making your skin glow or whatever it is. The metaverse version of that that could be sold on a limited edition NFT basis is maybe a super cool filter that makes you look a particular way on a Zoom call like we're having right now. And I'm the only one on this call that has paid the money to have this filter. And God damn it, you know, I look absolutely fantastic. My skin is glistening in a way that yours isn't. And my representation in the metaverse space that is this Zoom call is super slick, super cool. So, I mean, that's, you know, there's lots of kind of applications for it.
I mean, you do look great, Tom. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's that NFT filter.
Worth every, I don't know what the penny equivalent of Bitcoin is, but worth every penny of that. Awesome. We'll move on to the second news story this week. Meta's incoming CTO, Andrew Bosworth, has outlined plans for how the social media giant can moderate their version of the metaverse. Their plan is to record all goings on within that metaverse via the footage stored on individual users' headsets and allow people to block other users and report bad behavior on the platform. When an incident is reported, several minutes of footage will be sent for assessment to the company's human reviewers. Users will be able to retreat to a personal safety zone, withdraw from others via a personal bubble, and request that a safety specialist invisibly monitor a potentially threatening situation. Despite saying that the firm wants almost Disney levels of safety, Bosworth conceded that policing users' behavior and interactions within the space at any meaningful scale is practically impossible, and that virtual reality can be a toxic environment in an internal memo sent to colleagues last March. However, the Reality Labs boss said that Meta should use their current community guidelines as a basis for moderating the new space, and has indicated that as Metaverse users will have a single account with Meta, it will be possible to block offenders across all their proprietary platforms. Critics have expressed their skepticism that controlling the billions of interactions expected to take place across the sprawling virtual space would even be possible, not least for Meta, who have a poor track record of containing and removing harmful content from their existing platforms. A Facebook spokesperson has said that moderating the metaverse won't be the job of any one company alone. It will require collaboration across industry and with experts, governments, and regulators to get it right. What are your first impressions on this one, guys? And do you think it would be possible to effectively moderate this version of the metaverse? Lindsay, let's go to you first on that one.
I mean, trust Facebook to really overcomplicate social moderation and cause Matt to please follow his words or try to explain it to us. I think that the regulation part of the metaverse is what I find absolutely fascinating. And you know, I don't like calling it the metaverse anymore because Facebook have bastardized the term. So I'd rather just refer to it as Web 3.0 from now on, actually. I think we should all in ad tech just kind of come to that mutual agreement that it's no longer called metaverse, it's just Web 3.0. But I think that Facebook have not done a great job of moderating their text-based content. So how they're going to moderate a virtual world is beyond me. But the big thing here that Facebook did obviously allude to, or didn't allude to it, actually said it, was that it can't just be the job of Facebook. And this is the fascinating thing for me, is the regulation around the metaverse. And because the metaverse transcends countries, it transcends the legalities of a country. How globally will the metaverse be moderated, regulated? We've already seen big tech try to take on the mantle of kind of cross-market, cross-country moderation and regulation, in that there is no regulation and it doesn't work. And this is arguably a much more toxic environment, the metaverse, and a much more potentially dangerous environment than anything text-based currently is, or anything kind of like video social media-based currently is. So I'm very fascinated to see how that works, because there's questions around regulation, there's questions around law, questions around, you know, the sharing of wealth across the metaverse and kind of capitalism within that. I think that what Facebook are doing is trying to lead the conversation already by saying we know there's a problem here, we're on it. But in them doing that, they're contributing to the problem, and the problem will be that big tech will try to run the metaverse, and big tech, you know, shouldn't do that. Tech is a fundamental requirement here, but they can't be the ones that control it, because that will just cause bigger problems than we have now. We've already got enough big problems when it comes to digital in this world. So I think that it's setting a dangerous precedent, personally.
Absolutely. Tom, how do you see that regulation aspect being unpicked?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to build on what Lindsay was talking about with, you know, is it possible for big tech, as we currently understand it, so the FANGs or GAFA or whatever we're talking about, to own this space. I think it's unlikely. I think fundamentally, Web 2 is a, in Web 2, advertising is really is monetization. Like, that is Web 2 monetization, is advertising. And every business, every big Web 2 business is an advertising business, or most big Web 2 businesses are advertising businesses. Facebook, Google, fundamentally advertising businesses. Even the Web 2 businesses that are not advertising businesses, so Amazon, Apple, started off doing different things. They're trending towards being advertising businesses. And then you even get other businesses that, you know, kind of come into Web 2, you know, Walmart or whatever, start doing advertising as well. So everything in Web 2 trends towards advertising. And that's because fundamentally Web 2 is a centralizing technology. And, you know, how you win in a Web 2 world is you aggregate eyeballs onto your platform. You create a pinch point between, you know, in a two-sided market, and then you monetize those eyeballs with ads. So, you know, Web 2 is fundamentally, and you collect consumer data in order that you can monetize those eyeballs better than anybody else. I mean, Web 3 is fundamentally a decentralizing technology, so much more kind of far more nodes, far more trust, far more ability to interact beyond those kind of centralizing platform points. So, and the second part of it is consumers owning their own data, owning and monetizing and managing their own data. So, yeah, I mean, Facebook, Google own our data, they monetize it. That's the play. In a Web3 world, using our wallets, we will have self-sovereign identity. We will very easily manage and monetize our data, because it will be sitting there in a blockchain in front of us. Monetizing it will be as simple as, you know, if you've ever done anything crypto, staking a coin or something. I mean, it's not like really complicated stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a completely, completely different world. And then I think, you know, the other fundamental part of it is advertising, such a big part of media, because it's a great proxy for micro payment, right? So credit cards, you know, before the world of the internet, you know, really difficult to pay for content on a micro scale. With the internet, it's difficult for me to pay for individual pages. There's no micro payment solution that really works. With, you know, Web3 is built in Ethereum or some other blockchain, but it's built in programmable money. So value exchange is super, super simple, even at a micro level. So we don't really need advertising to act so much as a proxy for that micro payment for content. I can actually make those micro payments really simply. So sort of, you know, the Web 2 world, advertising, absolute driving force. Web 3 world, you know, there's tons of monetization. Tons of different monetization options. So, of course, advertising will still be there, still be really, really important, but it won't be the dominant force of the Web3 era in the way that it was for Web2. And I think that, you know, so Facebook, Google, whatever, I mean, they're going to be massively challenged, because their business models are just kind of, you know, just turned on their head, really.
Do we need to stop listening to Facebook then? Because, like, stop listening to Facebook spouting this rubbish and believing that Facebook, because I think Facebook believes they're the future of the metaverse, but actually they're not. And actually it sounds like, you know, given some of the companies out there that are doing some really cool stuff, you know, in the social gaming world, which is kind of the foray into the metaverse, are Facebook actually massively on the back foot? And should we just not listen to what they're saying?
I think partly, but also, you know, there's some very smart people at Facebook. They've got, you know, they've got huge budgets. They've just hired 10,000 engineers to work on the metaverse.
Yeah,
so they're
true.
Super serious about it. They're super smart. You know, they'll work out ways, I'm sure, of bridging across those gaps. You just talked about, you know, gaming as being, yeah, I mean, the metaverse is really growing out of gaming because, you know, that's a 3D space where people are actually hanging out and doing fun stuff with people. And there you go. Here's the metaverse right in front of us. And that's, you know, yeah. So it's coming out of gaming. So I'm sure that's it's already an easy entry point for Facebook, whether that's acquisitions or, I mean, Tencent is a business, although, I mean, Tencent are in trouble at the moment. I don't know if you saw, but the Chinese government has just stopped them updating all of their apps in China anyway. So who knows what's going on with Tencent?
Yeah, I mean, Tencent, the regulation is.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. But Tencent's such a smart business, invested in tons of gaming assets, both in Asia and, you know, and globally. Facebook probably will need to start making smart acquisitions in the gaming space in the same way as they made smart acquisitions in the social space with WhatsApp and Instagram and kind of, you know, gave themselves more runway versus their initial iteration, which was just the Facebook app. So I'm sure they'll buy smartly. And they've got loads of smart people working on it. So they'll be serious. But I just don't think they're the only show in town. And I don't think, you know, what they, yeah. As you said, Lindsay, maybe we shouldn't only be listening to Facebook.
But also, isn't the China thing with Tencent interesting? Because I look at these stories about what's happening with big tech in China, and I think that China is looking at big tech and going, you're getting too big for your boots now. You should never be bigger than we are. Like, you should never be bigger than the Chinese government. Are they the example of where kind of like country law can kind of overcome and supersede big tech? And actually, when it comes to looking at the metaverse, are China the example of where a government should understand what role regulation plays in something that crosses different markets?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's I think that is the dynamic that's going on in China. I think the Chinese government is uncomfortable with the influence that the tech platforms are having on Chinese society. But, you know, in the same way, maybe we should be a bit more uncomfortable in the West with the impact that the tech platforms are having on society. I mean, there's kind of,
exactly,
you know, ongoing spiraling antitrust cases, but there's not been, you know, there's not been a lot of action taken. But yeah, okay. But yeah, beyond that, I think that the problem that you identified with kind of policing the metaverse is that it's supranatural, supranational. You know, is and the idea that I've always thought, the idea that you can police the online space, why is that a problem for the platform? Shouldn't that be a problem for, you know, for the police, essentially? And for, you know, these are things, you know, in the real world, we deal with this with having a police force and, you know, kind of taking people to court. And yet online, it seems like we're, you know, we're much more reticent to to police it properly, to do that. I mean, the metaverse, the idea that you could sort of, that the platforms are going to be able to police a three-dimensional space that essentially operates the same as the real world, in that we're all running around doing whatever we want, going to the cinema, going shopping, blah, blah, blah. And that is policeable in a sort of, you know, brand safety filters, sort of Facebook platformy way. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. Nobody could ever do that, and the only way to deal with it is, you know, is going to be to for the police to get involved, to be honest.
Yeah, I think
do that. I mean, I don't know, because it's a supranational space. So.
Yeah, I think the kind of pushback on that would be, you know, to use China as an example. I think Beijing's ideas of what constitute harmful and dangerous online behaviours are probably a lot different to Western ideals. So to kind of marry those differing opinions together would be quite difficult. But I agree with you absolutely that it's something that needs to be done and looked at.
Yeah. But I think the environment, it can be a safe space depending on the environment. I mean, we look at a lot of gaming now, you know, really quite a safe space. Easy place for brands to play. I think as we get further down the track of people doing more stuff in the metaverse, it gets a lot more complex.
That segue into gaming moves us nicely into the third news story of the week. Niantic has unveiled their first brand campaign dubbed Meet You Out There. The two-minute video was created by Gravity Road, portrays human gamers within a hybrid world that's made up of reality and the metaverse. Initially released as a viewable in-game feature for players of Niantic's first title, Ingress, the campaign is set to be issued across the US via a multimedia campaign. The key emphasis within the campaign is the importance of going outdoors and interacting in real-world settings, something which the Pokemon Go creator considers particularly important. Niantic products encourage our global community to get outside, explore, and connect with one another, said Archit Bagara, director of worldwide product marketing. Elsewhere, he said that the company's AR can serve this purpose of enhancing our outdoor experiences. Founded 9 years ago by a team that spun out from what would later become Google Earth, Niantic has also this week raised $300 million from tech-focused investment manager Kochu at a valuation of $9 billion, which we used to help construct the real-world metaverse. Commenting on the brand campaign, Gravity Road's Mark Boyd wrote, "There is so much about the metaverse that is dark, dystopian, scary, and negative. But what Niantic talks about is the possibility. This film is the antithesis of people being stuck in a dark room. It's a rallying cry to get outside and experience the world." My first question to you guys is, do you agree with Boyd's assessment that there is generally a negative perception of the metaverse as it stands at the moment? Tom, let's start off with you on that one.
Well, I mean, Lindsay didn't like the idea that she was going to be caring more about her digital items than the real world stuff.
No.
And I think that's perfectly natural. I mean, I don't have a huge desire to be kind of shut in a darkened room with virtual reality goggles on my face 24/7. I don't think most people do. And I think that's key to understanding what the metaverse is that it's not that kind of virtual reality experience that we've seen in a lot of earnings calls recently.
It isn't Ready Player One, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not Ready Player One. Yeah, totally. It's, you know, the metaverse will exist, already exists across a range of screens and will continue to exist across a range of different screens and experiences. And that will be, you know, everything from our mobile phones to our laptops to the big screen in the corner of the room in our house to smart devices and smart glasses with an augmented reality layer. And it will exist. It will be virtual reality, 3D spaces that we enter, but it will also exist across that, you know, augmented reality layer that we could either kind of action via our mobile phones or, you know, via smart glasses. I think smart glasses are going to be the really transformational metaverse device. And they're not that far away, really. We're only looking at kind of 4-5 years before we've got probably, you know, normal looking glasses that will have augmented reality functionality embedded into them. And I think, yeah, with, you know, exactly what Niantic are talking about, that's where the metaverse starts to get a bit more fun and a bit less dystopian.
And see, how does this portrayal of the metaverse compare to others you've come across?
This is when I think about the smart glasses thing, that is kind of what I hope, what I think makes the most sense. And that's what I hope things start to look like. And there's a video, and I've referenced it a couple of times, but I cannot remember who did this video. It was a few years ago now. It was done by somebody in Latin America. And it was basically that. I think this person was going about their daily lives wearing some kind of smart glass type thing. And they were like an Instacart driver. So they were taking orders from people and then going to the supermarket and collecting these orders. They get their trolley. At the end of the trolley was a cat. And it said, keep this cat alive for the journey. Feed this cat and look after this cat for your journey around the supermarket. It was a virtual cat, obviously, seen through the Google glasses. And you will get 10 coupons to be able to go and spend in the store. And like every part of the shop they went to, like a virtual offer would appear in front of them. That was personalized to them because they have this many points. They've been doing X, Y, Z. They get on the bus, they go past buildings. They'd see different things that were, again, exclusive to them, what they were seeing. And that's kind of, I think about this video a lot when we're talking about the metaverse, because that for me makes a hell of a lot more sense than Ready Player One, which is what I normally think about when we talk about the metaverse, because it just all seems like this sort of scary, terrifying, you know, buying fake burritos from Chipotle. And I use that reference because Chipotle launched a for Halloween, they launched a Chipotle shop store within Roblox for the Halloween burrito, if you get that. That's because it's Halloween,
what a,
right? Yeah.
What a part.
Very good.
I mean, that is fun headline worthy, isn't it?
Well, exactly. I thought it was excellent. I had a little chuckle to myself when I read it. But I was thinking, why would I eat a virtual burrito when I can eat a real one? And that's kind of what I question the kind of like, how do I go about what's real and what is not real and how the two interact. And this video that I can't remember the name of kind of depicts that for me perfectly. And that basically kind of is exactly what Tom just described about going about your normal world and what Niantic are doing as well, right? And I think I watched the video Niantic have done and I liked it because it does remind us that we still have an outside world and it's not just kind of we're living in this world that's, you know, been completely scorched by all the bad things we've done. It's completely destroyed and ruined and we're all now just living virtually because it's far safer and far better and far happier there than it is in the real world.
Yeah. No, totally. And I think there's a couple of things you're talking about in there around kind of, you know, the location targeted, very hyper location targeted advertising, the kind of augmented reality layer, the experiential stuff that, you know, kind of talk about what advertising and marketing might look like in the metaverse. And I think we can see this coming through already in gaming, mobile gaming, advertising particularly. I think there's three parts to kind of what advertising looks like in the metaverse, which, you know, I think Niantic is a good kind of segue into. So the first one is, you know, really, really hyper-targeted, exactly as you said, kind of walking around that sort of, you know, location-specific, augmented reality. I think the second thing is really interactive and experiential. I mean, we've got, you know, we spend so much time, I spend so much time already talking to brands and kind of reminding them that their ad isn't on that screen the other side of the room anymore. It's in the palm of kind of the consumer's hand. And, you know, you've got an opportunity to engage with consumers. So why don't you take it? And what do we do with our mobile phones? We touch, tap, swipe, you know, whatever. And same as, you know, augmented reality glasses. So we're moving into a much more interactive, experiential sort of world where we need to, where the bar for engaging with consumers is now much higher. If you provide something that is fun and interactive, then consumers will engage with it. But then I think the third part of that, and, you know, because we don't want, I think, probably stuff popping up in our glasses all the time, is that there's a respectful element to what advertising will look like in the metaverse. And I think what we do in mobile gaming with rewarded video advertising is a really kind of really key part of that, where you can with rewarded video, you can you reach a point at the end of a level perhaps where you run out of lives, you need more lives, you can you have a choice, you can either pay to get another life or you can watch a video and get it for free. So that kind of, you know, that sort of choice, you don't have to watch advertising, but advertising can actually level up your experience. And that's, you know, really easy to apply to that kind of augmented reality, location targeted kind of world. You don't have to engage with this, but here's an opportunity. Maybe you don't have to pay at the counter, you can do something and get a discount. And then the other part of it is digital virtual out of home. So native in-game advertising, and the idea of being able to layer stuff over 3D worlds or over kind of, you know, augmented reality. And place ads in those 3D spaces in a way that isn't interruptive, but just kind of, you know, we walk around, there are posters on the subway or on the tube as we get off. That kind of stuff just kind of continues, but it's not interruptive in the way that a lot of advertising, I mean, I think a pre-roll, a lot of what goes on in social media is quite kind of interruptive advertising experiences that consumers begin to find quite distracting.
Yeah, sort of on that note and tying back to the previous story, how is that kind of regulated? How is that be sort of policed in terms of, you know, maintaining that uninterruptive advertising environment?
I don't think it'll be policed. I think it's something that just kind of naturally develops out of the environment. The environment that we're in. I mean, we talked about the fact that, you know, we don't need advertising so much as a proxy for micro payment. So much easier. I mean, the reason that rewarded video already works in mobile gaming is because you're in an environment where you're playing a game, you've already got your payment details in there. You've probably already paid for kind of a batch of five lives or something like that, or for kind of some items to help level up your gameplay. So when you kind of reach the point of either pay for this or watch a video, you've got the opportunity to make the micropayment. So mobile gaming creates this environment where advertising doesn't have to be the micropayment. The consumer is able to do it themselves. And I think what Web3 does is it creates that environment everywhere. Easy to make micropayments, so very easy to put in front of the consumer the choice of, do you want to pay for this thing, or do you want to watch an ad and get a discount or get it for free? So I think it's Web3, the metaverse lends itself to more respectful forms of advertising. And I don't think platforms, products, games, experiences will get away with kind of interruptive advertising as they do right now.
Sure. In terms of that, the micropayment element, in terms of brands and retailers looking to enter the metaverse environment, how should they initially plan out their approach into it? Is it something that they can trial out now with existing platforms, or is it just something that they have to work on theoretically in advance of it coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the simplest answer to that for most brands is to look at gaming. And use that as a way to begin to test and learn across the metaverse. So when we look at gaming, we see four different parts of gaming. It's a funnel. At one end, you've got mobile gaming. So mobile gaming reaches 80% of consumers. So almost everybody has some sort of mobile game on their phone. People who play mobile games are not, wouldn't necessarily identify themselves as gamers, but they are spending time in games, you know, maybe spending time in a metaverse type environment. The next level down from that is what we call core gaming. So it's people who game either on a PC or a PlayStation, probably do identify as gamers and spend, you know, maybe a little bit more time with games. The next level down from that is streaming. So consumers who engage with game streaming content like on Twitch or other platforms, maybe spend time consuming or creating videos on YouTube other social media platforms are available. More deeply engaged with gaming. Right at the bottom of the funnel, esports. Around sort of 10% of the population engage with esports in some way, tend to be really, really passionate gamers, really identify as gamers. And so across that funnel, you've got everything from, you know, a mass reach media opportunity, which is 80% of the population playing mobile games, and you can just, you know, hit them with respectful, rewarded video ads in the same way as you can run an ad across Facebook or Instagram and hit a mass reach audience, everything down to, you know, really passionate gamers that you need to come up with a strategy to engage with. And for brands, the kind of the choice is, keep it simple, just kind of run ads in that environment and begin to learn about what gaming is, what the metaverse looks like right now, begin to build more interactive, experiential, playable experiences that you can put in front of consumers and start to test and learn. Or, obviously you can deep dive, go headfirst into gaming, build a massive gaming strategy, get involved with NFTs, whatever. I think of it much like the early days of social where, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, every brand's dream was to sort of go viral. And that was kind of what social media was all about. Actually, what social media ended up being all about was a mass reach advertising opportunity, which is great. But both of those things exist within gaming right now. That's probably the first step in for brands is to look at gaming as a way to test and learn.
Awesome. That provides us a really nice segue into the second part of the podcast where we discuss what you're up to, Tom, at Ad Colony and mobile gaming, the metaverse, and how that will all come to fruition. So yeah, over to you.
Yeah, so Ad Colony has, we've recently been acquired by Digital Turbine. So Ad Colony is now a Digital Turbine business. Ad Colony has historically been the largest mobile advertising platform focused on mobile gaming. So we've had two core sets of customers, gaming platforms, gaming businesses who want to distribute their games and also who want to monetize their games with our technology, and then brands who want to place ads within games. So that's what the Ad Colony platform has been all about. Digital Turbine acquired us. They rolled up Fiber, which is a slightly deeper supply side platform with header bidding technology. To really kind of get across that mobile app gaming supply. And they also acquired a platform called Appreciate, which is a app-focused DSP, so that we've got a performance-driven retargeting platform, a way of building and scaling audiences really quickly. And that all lines up with Digital Turbine's core business, which is, I mean, Digital Turbine have got some really cool technology. I think the two most interesting parts of what they do are, first of all, pre-installs on handsets. So if you're a big app business like Netflix, you can get your app pre-installed across every Samsung handset that is that's being distributed by AT&T in the US. And that, you know, for Netflix, hugely, hugely interesting way of scaling up and ensuring, you know, kind of complete ubiquity in the market. The second really interesting Digital Turbine technology is SingleTap. And that's a technology that enables direct download of an app from an ad to a mobile phone. So at the moment, the kind of user journey, if I see an ad and want to download the app, is hit the ad, which will take me to the app store, download the app from the app store. What SingleTap enables is a download direct from the app. And that's because Digital Turbine had tied up telcos, manufacturers. It's only available on Android. I mean, Apple protect their kind of app store experience much more strongly. But yeah. So that single tap opportunity results in, you know, much higher download rates. Really, really interesting. I mean, 30% conversion increase is what we see on average. And, wow. You know, the overall sort of the drive for Digital Turbine is to just create this kind of, you know, a virtuous loop, a flywheel in mobile app advertising, become the biggest independent competitor to Google and Facebook in mobile apps. And, you know, tons of money in mobile apps, a lot of it driven by that mobile gaming market, which is a, you know, 200-300 billion opportunity. So pretty exciting stuff.
Awesome. In terms of the mobile app stores, obviously there's been several recent court cases involving Apple and the kind of opening up of their store experience. Do you see that having a kind of major effect on the future mobile app ecosystem, or is it still going to remain quite a closed environment?
Okay, I mean, there's a few great answers to this. I mean, the first one is the kind of Web3, you know, metaverse answer, which is actually it's Bezos, which is your take rate is my opportunity. And, you know, is one of the interesting things that we're going to see in Web3. You know, these Apple have, I mean, difficult to kind of ascertain exactly what's going on, but anywhere from a kind of 30 to 80% margin on a lot of the business that they do. You know, Google, with the way that they stack up DV360 to Google AdX to DFP, they also extract, you know, huge margins. So these big Web2 businesses operate off quite high margins. And I think, most markets would probably end up kind of aggregating around, you know, maybe 3 to 5% is a reasonable margin for a market maker to make. And I mean, it's not a reasonable margin as in I'm saying this is reasonable. It just tends to be where non-monopolized, fairly transparent markets end up, is around kind of a 3 to 5% take rate. So the take rates that we're seeing in Web 2 at the moment are fundamentally unsustainable and will not translate into Web 3. So there will be huge changes. The recent kind of conversations that Apple has had and the litigation with Epic, I mean, I think that's the first kind of shots in that. And clearly, I mean, Apple's got a duty to its shareholders to, you know, maintain as high a margin as possible, same as Google and Facebook. And, you know, and it's up to governments and regulators to help you know, to help manage that and ensure that there's, you know, there's the right market pressure and also the right regulatory pressure so that margins, take rates become more compressed. So I'd expect this trend to continue and the markets to become more open and big businesses like Apple to be compelled to reduce take rates and open up.
Awesome. And in terms of the, you know, the game publisher and platform side of things, how can they prepare for, obviously we've seen in PC a lot of publishers running their own game launches, some with obviously great success. Obviously Roblox, you can, you know, make games within games. And then you have the likes of Rockstar with their, you know, recent GTA Definitive Edition hiccups. How can they kind of prepare for that kind of game within game platform?
I think those games within games will be a sizable part of the market. And clearly Roblox are doing something super interesting. And brands are, you know, brands are really getting on board with Roblox. So, you know, opportunities to, I mean, I talked about native in-game advertising. So opportunities to run, you know, run those, that digital virtual out of home within Roblox. Businesses like Nike, you know, building experiences in Roblox. So, yeah. So, I mean, that will be a part of the market. But I think the market will open up. I think blockchain gaming is probably more of the will be more of the driving force in the gaming economy over the next couple of years, and that will sit alongside those kind of that game within game economy.
Awesome. Well, that draws us just about out of time. Tom, thank you ever so much for your time.
Awesome. Cheers, Matt. Cheers, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Lindsay, thanks ever so much for joining us in your highly optimistic and non-combative mood to our guests.
Yeah, I warmed up, didn't I?
You did.
You did warm up. You're not still completely anti-Tom then?
I was never. I would like to just retract or make sure that my statement was understood. I'm not anti. I've never been anti Tom. Tom is one of my favorite people in ad tech. So it's I was the anti Tom, as in Tom is nice and chirpy and cheery, and I was not. But I am now. So it's all good.
I get it. I love it. And I can't wait to see you sporting your digital Gucci handbag.
Oh yeah, I'll be doing that very soon.
At the moment, I will be standing there saying, "Lindsay, I told you so."
And I hate that thought at the moment. I really do, but it's probably inevitable. I'm going to go and download Roblox now and start playing around with it. Maybe buy a Chipotle burrito.
Yeah, totally.
She'll have her avatar out with her Gucci tiara on in no time.
Yeah, that's very much sounds like me.
Okay, as long as you buy one for all of us.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Share the wealth.
Absolute look and a half. Listeners, thank you all ever so much for listening. Go and enjoy your noodle sandwiches and take care. That was this week's episode of the Mad Tech Podcast.